who I followed. And so I do a lot of speaking on reputational risk, and that we as leaders and as young people coming up in their careers, you really need to think long and hard about who you attach your reputation to and how that can damage you along the way, and how do you separate yourself. So the example I give is, if you look at Volkswagen or BP, those are perfect examples right now. Think about the Volkswagen dealership or the auto mechanic that had BP as their gas sign. They had no idea what was going on with BP. And what happened to their businesses when that happened with those corporations? Huge example that there were people that were on the verge of going out of business for their small mom and pop because they had the wrong brand attached to them.
Right.
I think we have to think really hard about what brands we have, how our reputation is branded.
I have a similar experience going back very early in my career. When I worked for the discount store chain in New Jersey, we had a reputation that got worse and worse while I was there, a lack of ethics and a lot of favoritism and nepotism. And the reputation of the company was so bad that when I saw that the company wasn't going to last, trying to find a job in the New York metropolitan area or even in the Northeast became very difficult. And that's what pushed me to going at that time to Chicago to find employment. Worked out pretty well for me, though.
Yeah, I think so.
No question about that.
Yeah.
So going back to some of these people who became your friends, became great colleagues of yours, and then you had to close down the operation or whatever, and you helped them find their way, do you stay in touch with them?
I do. You know, that's where social media is huge today. You know, I think about Facebook and LinkedIn, and I see what's happening with those people all the time, and they see what's happening with me all the time. The best reward that I can get in life is when I see someone that I may have hired right out of college or young in their career, and I see them being very successful in what they're doing today. The example I would give is I had some young people I hired out of college, and they launched their own IT company here in Nashville, and I cannot be prouder of them. Or when I'm walking somewhere and someone from 20 years ago that worked with me runs up and says, "Hey, you know, how are you or what are you doing?" Those are moments that I cherish.
Right. And you get those calls as well.
Oh, yes, all the time.
What's the toughest decision you've had to make? Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Was leaving Nashville a tough decision?
Very tough decision. Very, very tough. And I don't want to get teary. we've been here for 20 years in Tennessee. We spent some of that time in Memphis, but the majority of it here in Nashville. It's where my children grew up. I'm going to leave my son here, who's 24 and working at Ford Credit. I'm going to leave him behind and move. And lot of friends, lot of my growth and my career happened right here. I'm leaving my network that I've built. I'm sad about that. But you know what's really fun is that network is finding out that I'm leaving and I'm going to Cleveland, and they're all introducing me to people in Cleveland now. And it works. What I preach is working. So it's exciting, but sad.
So has that been the toughest decision, or have you had others?
I've had others. I would say one of the tough decisions throughout my career was when my husband and I sat down and said, okay, our daughter's in middle school. There's no after-school care. How are we going to juggle being both of us working? One of us needs to change our career, and both of us sitting down and having that conversation and figuring out which one was going to change. Luckily, my husband was in IT and was able to work from our home. But those are tough life decisions as you're a young professional trying to juggle life balance and family and your career and your travel schedule. And, you know, communication is the key to that.
Right. And a lot of people never have those conversations. It just sort of hangs like a cloud over you until something happens and forces a decision.
Yes.
So kudos to you for sitting down and facing it.
Well, and I do a lot of speaking to women's group. And, you know, in 2018, 51% of the workforce is going to be women. And so I think, because I'm a mom of a son, I think about how I need to change my son's expectations. You know, we so much put a lot of pressure on young men that they need to be the head of the household, the head breadwinner. They need to carry that weight. That's probably going to change for a lot of men here really, really soon, and how do we change their expectations to be okay with that mm-hmm. as society begins to change?
For sure.
Yeah.
What if I said, okay, Kim, I want your 10 leadership lessons, or 3 or 4 or whatever they are, what have you learned that will make you successful in Cleveland, that you will take back and practice with you and that will help you there?
I would say being vulnerable and being transparent with every single employee. I am. That's one of my leadership foundational values that I have, is that I want everyone to know me personally. I want them to understand what my values are, where my ethics are, and that's probably because of some of my history. Being totally transparent about the business so they can understand exactly why I'm making the business decisions that I'm making. So I just had my first, I'm 3 weeks into the job in Cleveland, 3 days a week, and I had my first all-employee meeting yesterday, and I showed all the financials. I showed every financial by line of business up on the board, and we talked about where are the challenges, where are the opportunities, and told them I'm going to be building a 3-year strategy for us, and these are the things I'll be trying to make decisions about. And I want them to be a part of that so that their ideas can come forward.
When you share with people and don't keep secrets, that's when people they begin to respect you mm-hmm. because you're not keeping secrets and you're sharing with what's going on, and then they help you achieve your goals. But if you keep information from people or you're not transparent, people are suspicious of you, and they can't help you get where you want to go. Yeah.
Because they don't know.
That's right. Now, there's a little bit of when you make yourself vulnerable like that, you've got to be honest. When people ask you difficult questions, you've got to be totally honest with them, and you've got to tell them the truth about how others feel about them in the organization, how their performance is. Are they meeting expectations? You've got to set that groundwork of being totally honest, and sometimes that can be difficult.
It is difficult.
Yeah. Other lessons that I've learned, I would say growing up in corporate America, and I've grown up in big corporate America, I'm with private company now, but corporate America, I would tell anybody that you need to build, you need to network within your corporation. If that's the number one thing I've learned, you've got to look up and be networking with all those people that will be making those future decisions for future leadership positions, and be telling them what you want. I was telling you, Mary, that in January I met with the CEO of Hyland and told them, I'm interested in moving back to Ohio. If you see opportunities, please let me know and let's talk about it. You've got to let people know that's where your head is and what you're thinking, so they'll think of you when that next opportunity comes about. The other key thing I've learned, I always have a phenomenal relationship with the head of HR. And the reason for that is I will meet with them every quarter and make sure they know where I want to be, what development should I be doing, and who do I need to build a relationship with in the company. And they can help guide me because they're going to be in the meeting any time a new position's developed or a new area is coming about.
I'm often amazed that people who will say, gee, why didn't they pick me for the job? And I say, well, does anybody know you want it? And very often people think, well, my performance should speak for itself, which is nice, but you're much better off making sure that your boss knows where you want to go and your boss's boss knows where you want to go and the HR department knows. And then you can also turn around and say, now, what skills do I need to develop to get to this next step?
What's the path?
The more people you engage in a process, the more they're going to help you get there. And plus, they're going to take a sense of ownership. Gee, I help so-and-so get ahead.
Yep. I'm also a big proponent of building those relationships at your peer level as well. You never know when one of those peers is going to move up. And you want them to be your champion, but also getting to know all those superstars that may be below you, not just in your department, but all throughout the organization, the mail room, wherever they are, because they can be your champions as well, no matter where you go in the company.
Yeah, not only can they be your champions, they can also tear you apart when you don't even realize it.
Yes.
So if you're nasty to the people in the mail room, that's going to get back to you one way or another. It's like mm-hmm. when you go into an office. The first person you see is going to get an impression of that person. And if the switchboard operator or the receptionist is really polite to you, you have a good impression of that company. If the person is either nasty or just not very friendly, you get a different impression.
There's a great book called Platform I forget the author, he ran Thomas Nelson Publishing, yeah. And he talks about how important that receptionist position is.
Right.
And it's a phenomenal chapter. I've actually copied that chapter and given it to every receptionist I have had at my companies to make sure that they know they treat whoever's coming in the door. They're the first impression and maybe the last impression that customers and clients get.
Yeah.
Yes.
They may be the only.
They may have the most important position in the whole company.
Right. You're exactly right. I want to go back to something that you said about trust and transparency, and there's been and vulnerability.
Yeah.
There's been, I've had a lot of requests recently for, can you help us develop our team? Our team isn't playing nice together, or we're having issues or whatever. And my go-to resource there is the 5 Dysfunctions of a Team, the book, and then the material, which is all around the 5 Behaviors of a Cohesive Team, and that whole idea of letting yourself be vulnerable to other people, to letting other people know what your weak spots are, as well as promoting your strong suits.
Yes.
It's so important because we all know we're not perfect, and yet most of the time we're very protective of what we don't do well, and we don't want people to know that. But the only way that they can help us, again, if I don't know where you're going, I can't help you get there.
That's
yeah.
Right.
So. I had my first sales meeting with my team in Cleveland this week, probably 12 sales people, all men, and I had to set the tone, but I'm very vulnerable in that meeting. You know, I told him my strength is not, I know as a leader I'm supposed to be good at doing agendas for meetings. I suck at it. I'm not good at it. I just am not. If you want me to talk about something or we need to focus on it, you need to bring it in here with us or email it to me and we will talk about it. But being totally transparent to them, and then the tone I wanted to set with them is, we can all hate each other in this room, but once we leave this room, everyone in this company, every one of our clients, and everyone outside of this company better think that we are best friends and we have each other's back. You know, there's friendly competition in selling, but we are one company. Mm-hmm. So you just got to set that tone. I think that's a key leadership principle. You've got to be that leader that's willing to set that tone and tell people what you expect.
What was their reaction? I'm just curious.
Very, very good.
Good.
Yeah, I think they've been... Most people want strong leadership. They want someone who will set boundaries for them. They want someone that will hold them accountable. They will never say that, but most people will perform much better if they know what the expectations is and they know what they're being held accountable for.
Exactly.
And they'll exceed.
Exactly. So what are your next steps there?
Uh-oh,
you know, we talked about the end of life here. What are your first, what are your next few weeks going to be like there? What are some of your priorities?
We have 23 very high-end large clients up there. So I've got to meet all of those clients. That's a main focus for me, letting those clients get to know me personally. I met 2 of them this week, and we're starting that process. It's important that they know me personally, and we can build a relationship. That's just key. Also, every employee, I've got lunches set up with groups of all of my direct reports I've met with. Those were my first priority, but now I'm going to the level lower, and so I've put them in groups of 4 or 5, and I've got them going to lunch with me. That'll take me through mid-November. but I want them to get to know me personally and be able to ask anything they want to ask, and so we're headed down that path, and then we need to grow the business. So we're already got sales calls set up for prospecting, so that's already starting to happen. So I would say those are my 3 big things right now.
You have to tell them how they can ask questions.
Yes. If you've got questions, callers, *7, or if you're online, enter your question and hit submit. We'll take them anytime.
We're very conversational.
Okay, so let's now put our attention on those people that are coming along behind us, and what advice do you have for young leaders who are in our listening group?
I was recently speaking at an MBA class, and I had a young lady who said to me she hated her baby boomer boss. She just wanted him to move out of the way so she could move up and take his position. And what I tried to explain to her is that, and I'm a baby boomer, so baby boomers are the most loyal generation there ever will be. And we are loyal to a fault. Sometimes we will hold on to that company while it's going down because we are so loyal. But we're also loyal to the employees. So if she would take time and just learn from that baby boomer and put a little bit of her patience aside and maybe the ego aside and learn from that baby boomer, as that baby boomer goes out the door, he will bring her right in to his position. I think impatience is a little bit of a barrier for us. I would encourage people to be courageous and ask those people that you want to learn about leadership from, or anybody in Nashville or anywhere that you want to learn from, just call and ask.
Don't hesitate to approach.
Whether it's within your company or outside your company, you'd be shocked if you just ask what the reception would be.
Always support your boss. There's no upside in doing the opposite. I'll go back in my career and share a story with you that you may have heard before. When the president who hired me at Tractor Supply Company got fired, another fellow came in as a caretaker, Tom Hennessy, and I tried to work together with Tom, and the other guys, my peers, the other four or five vice presidents, really didn't like Tom because they knew he was only a caretaker and they were very loyal to the previous president. I pitched in and helped, and I stuck with him and got to know him, and he got to know me, and he and I worked together. 3 months later, when he became the permanent president, who'd he pick for the number two job in the company? Me. And if I hadn't been supportive of him, if I'd been antagonistic like the other four or five fellows had been, I wouldn't be in a position I got into at that time or where I am today, for that matter.
I also used it. I've been using, just in the last 3 weeks, one of your techniques you taught us in class was that how you manage up, and so how you can make sure your boss knows what you've been successful with the last week. Well, I have changed reporting structures with this new position, so I'm reporting to two different people. So two totally different personalities. You know, I had trust and that relationship already built with the last person I reported to. Now I'm starting all over again. And this person doesn't know me, doesn't know how I'm going to react. I think he's a little worried that I'm going to get chewed up and spit out by some of the people in this office. So I've had to over-communicate with him and just help keep him in the loop. And with email today, that's very easy to do. You know, I can easily shoot an email up and say, hey, here's what's going on today. I'm having this set of meetings. Here's some issues you need to be aware of. I think, Joe, you taught us in class that at the end of the week on Friday, send a list up to your boss of here's the things I accomplished this week. If you have any questions, let me know about it, just to keep them in the loop of what's happening. So I've recommended that to several people. I think it works great.
It's not all bad to market yourself once in a while.
Yep,
definitely. So we've talked a lot about advice you would give or have given. What's the best advice you've received?
Best advice I ever received was allow myself to be pushed out of my comfort zone. Mm-hmm. I would have never been a good presenter if I didn't have a boss 20 years ago that told me, and I was scared to death to get up in front of 100 people and present, and it was information that I knew, unless he pushed me out of my comfort zone. It's okay, Kim, you will do fine. Get out of your comfort zone and let yourself be developed in an area you haven't been developed in. I think that's key.
We have one question from our audience. I would be interested in hearing your thoughts on pay for performance and recognition for achievement.
Great question. Do you guys want to go first or you want me to go?
Ahead.
Okay. Pay for performance is very, very important. I think sometimes we sit back. I know this is a woman issue. We sit back and we assume everyone knows the great job we're doing. Everyone knows how many hours I'm putting in. I will be rewarded when it comes to promotion time or review time. I've learned over the years that sometimes that doesn't get noticed.
Nothing could be further from the truth.
Noticed. So I think if we want to be paid for our performance, we better be communicating and documenting and making sure we're having those regular meetings with our manager. Manage up and say, here's what I'm doing. How do I get to the next level of pay? What things do I need to do to get there? And document it. And you've got to manage that process. Take control of it and manage it yourself. I will tell you through this process of being offered this position They never once told me what the compensation was going to be when they were talking to me about taking this job and were getting ready. They wanted me up there and had never told me what the compensation was going to be. And I'm sitting here thinking, how many times have I told people, take control of this? I got to do it. And so I did it. I pushed back and said, I am not going there until I see my written compensation plan. And they pushed back and put it on me. What do you want it to be? Okay, I'm going to tell you what I want it to be.
No problem.
I outlined it. And because I went through negotiations through Scarlet Leadership, I knew how to say what I wanted, but I had the power, and then I took control of it. So it was a great position to be in. But you got to control that. I don't think you can sit back and wait for it to happen.
You can't. And sometimes we think, well, surely he sees that, or surely she sees that and knows what a great job I'm doing. But we all know how busy we are, and everybody else is just as busy. And so a lot of times it isn't a matter of they're not paying attention or they don't care about you. It's that they've got their own things going on.
Yes.
So we do. We have to own it for ourselves.
And then I think the other side of that is once I get the pay I'm okay with, I can't complain about it. I can't compare my – once I get what I've asked for,
right,
I can't compare and complain about it.
Right.
I need to be happy about it and go do my job. Now
I need to do my homework first.
Yes, do your homework and make sure you know what is the going salary for a position of my caliber in the marketplace that I'm in. I needed to think about moving from Nashville to Cleveland, cost of living. Taxes are very, very different in those two locations, so I had to take that into consideration. You need to think through a relocation package. Think through all of those aspects of what that compensation is, just not the base salary.
It was the second part of that question that had to do with recognition.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you're the king of recognition.
What was the question?
It was just hearing your thoughts on recognition for achievement.
As I like to say, it's when your dog does a trick, you give him a treat. When a human being does something well, you don't give him a treat, don't give him any food, you pat him on the back. Recognition is the food for human beings. So the more people do something good, the more you pat them on the back, the more you'll get of the same performance. And when your team does something good, celebrate in whatever way you can. But don't dwell on the negative. Dwell on the positive, and you'll get more and more of those results.
I agree with that totally. I think, and recognition doesn't always have to be monetary. It doesn't have to be money. It can just be going out on the floor and telling someone, you know, I really appreciate that you did this for me today. Other people will hear that.
And give credit when they least expect it.
Yes.
Money is shouldn't even be part of the
recognition. And I'm a little old-fashioned. So email, you know, you can email anyway, but I like to be different. So I still do handwritten notes to lots of people. I do it to clients I meet for the first time. I do it to people I network with. Employees love that. It's something they can keep. They can take it home and show their family.
That's exactly right. And we underestimate the power of that.
Yes.
We have another question. Education is certainly a key, but there seems to be a trend to valuing MBAs over experience, and sometimes that's youth versus maturity. Your thoughts on that?
I don't have an MBA, so it's funny. I don't have an MBA, but I get asked to speak at MBA classes all the time. I think with so many people being college educated today, an MBA makes you different in when you're applying for those positions. I will tell you, I saw an amazing statistic the other day. I think 70% of jobs today are awarded to people that knew someone inside of the company. It wasn't just applying online, and I think that's something our younger generation is struggling with right now. They are so technology-driven and social media-driven that they're losing that aspect of building that personal one-on-one relationship, and it's awkward for them. And it's going to hurt them in the long run when it comes to finding that next job.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
I was working with a young fellow recently on how to get a job, and he sent a couple of resumes away, and he's waiting for a response. And I was explaining to him, see, getting a job is a full-time job, and you got to make calls, you got to send emails, you got to knock on doors, you got to use all your contacts, and all your friends' contacts, and all your friends' friends' contacts.
Yes.
It's a full-time job. Back to the MBA question,
yeah.
I know a lot of companies are enamored with hiring MBAs, which may be a step in, an initial step in to get in the door. But after that point, whether you're an MBA or a PhD or a eighth grade education, it should be your compensation and your progression should be based on your accomplishment, measured accomplishment. You do a better job than the MBA, you get ahead. You don't do as good a job, the MBA gets ahead.
And I totally agree with that. I think that having an MBA makes you a well-rounded employee because as a hiring leader, I know they have a very good foundation skill set in place that I can work with. I think that's what the value of an MBA brings. I struggle with, personally, do I go back and get an MBA? What value would it bring to me? And can it take me any further? I worry about that. I think, yes, it probably could, but it would have to be an MBA from a certain institution at my age and where I'm at in my career.
29. Huh? You're only 29.
Yeah, I wish I was 29. but I think those are all questions we ask ourselves. I went back to – I had an associate's degree up until mid-90s, late 90s. I only did it on an associate degree. I was a vice president of a company for two companies and only had an associate degree because it was my experience and my knowledge that I built very quickly. But I went back and got a degree – a bachelor's degree at night, and I think there is great, it brings you great, accomplishment as a person. I needed that to build my self-confidence.
Your own confidence.
Yes. I don't think the employer needed to see it anymore because of my wealth of knowledge. I needed it for my own self-confidence, and maybe that's where the MBA is as well,
right,
to build your own self-confidence, that you can go in and successfully get that job because I have everything.
Right. I do think that we need to reconsider when we have an MBA as a minimum requirement for a job. Mm-hmm. There are always exceptions.
Yes.
And some companies will consider that, and some companies won't. And I think the companies that don't really are losing out on some great people.
A different aspect, there's a book called The Confidence Code about women. One of the weaknesses of women is when we look at job qualifications, we must meet every single thing that's outlined. So if a job says you need to have an MBA, doesn't matter if I have 20 years of experience, if it said that, I can't apply for it. A man will apply no matter what. And I saw this with my kids. I have a daughter and son. My daughter was a CPA, had great experience. When she went out on the job market, she would not apply for stuff because it said you needed 8 years of experience and she only had six.
Mm-hmm.
My son came out of college. He applied for anything and everything he could get to. So it's just a different confidence level, I think.
It definitely is.
Yeah.
So.
But I agree with you. I think companies need to reconsider having that MBA.
I think so, too.
And maybe it's a way of screening out all those entry-level applicants.
Right. But what if one of them is the thing?
Yeah.
The perfect person.
Yeah.
What are you most proud of so far? And I mean, you're not young in your career. You're young, but you're not young in your career. You've been at it for a long time. But what so far?
I'm very proud of all the people, all the people that I've journeyed with over my career. You know, my husband and I are both in the insurance industry, and a lady that I started my career with is getting ready to retire at another company that my husband used to work at. And we both worked with her throughout the years, and I'm like, that's someone we need to send flowers to on her retirement day because we both have had interactions with her. The people is what I love, that network of people that maybe I had some small part in their career. I love that piece of it. The other thing I'm very proud of is taking the leadership skills that I've developed throughout the years and being able to go into the nonprofit sector and be able to use those skills at a board level. That was very intimidating for me. Being on a board, thinking that I needed a whole different set of skill sets to be successful on a board, what I figured out after a few years was it's the same skill set I have. I just got to use it here and make it successful. And so I love that giving back piece. I love being able to give back to the passions that I believe in. Those are the things I would be most proud about.
Excellent. Yeah. Cleveland is so lucky, aren't they, to be getting her?
They are. It's good.
They just don't know it yet. They will know it soon.
So do you have a goal, one primary goal or set of goals for your new position? Other than turning it around completely.
Yeah, turning it around. Yeah, I want to turn it around. I'd like to see it turned around and doing great things by, you know, that three-year mark is usually my turnaround period, 3 to 4 years. For Nashville, we were the worst-performing office out of 14 offices when I took it, and I can tell you we are number one in every key indicator across the board this year. So, I mean, that's what I'm proud of. If I can do that, thank you. If I can do that again in Cleveland, then that's great. Other proud things, I'm proud of my daughter and son that had a working mom, and I juggled the best I could, and a husband that stood beside me while I was doing that. Proud of that structure and proud to see them entering the business world and calling me with questions about how to do it. That's fun. That makes you proud. Other things that I want to do. Other things I would love to do. I do a lot of speaking. That's a passion of mine, giving back that way. I would love to build a retirement career where I go do that at some point when I'm done with corporate America, doing that full time. I would love to get my first book written in the next 24 months. I mean, those are personal goals of mine that I would love to do.
You'll be busy.
Busy, yeah.
Very busy.
I'm an empty nester. It's time to be busy.
I know, and isn't it wonderful?
It is.
It's a different kind of wonderful.
It is.
But it is. Anything else you'd like to share?
Wow. Open mic.
Yes.
I was going to ask a question.
Or do you have another question for her?
I was going to ask the audience if they have some questions. Come on, hit the button. What
star
is
seven.
Star
or
seven.
Type in your question and hit submit.
We have a free jar of peanut butter for the first person to hit star seven.
I would say my word of advice is I think there are so many great leaders. And you don't have to be the top leader in a company. You can be a leader, a team leader of a small group. There are so many great people that sit on the sidelines and don't raise their hand to get involved in our communities. And our communities need great leadership everywhere. They need great leadership to support our political aspirations, our governor, our mayor, wherever that is. We need great leadership around, school systems and our nonprofits. I mean, we have so many nonprofits. And if you just look up and raise your hand and say, I would like to help, you could be used so many different places, and it will make you so much better as a leader if you get well-rounded and figure out how you can give back in addition to running a company.
Tom Parrish and I are very involved in the charter school operations here in Nashville, and I am continually recommending people to be on the boards of charter schools. So if any of you listening here think that that's something you might like to do, send me an email, joe@joescarlett.com. We're continually looking for high-quality folks, particularly with business backgrounds, that can sit on charter school boards.
Yep.
It's a very rewarding thing to do, and the charters are producing phenomenal results, too.
Yes, they are. And there are lots of other nonprofits that are just
yes,
as needy,
yes,
and just looking for just great people to be on the board.
They are
thinkers.
Yes, and it's a great way to get connected with other people in the community that you would never get connected with before. Great way to get exposed to other
leaders.
So
it's more of that networking.
It is. It is in learning from those other leaders.
Yes. It all comes together, doesn't it?
Yes. And I think the other thing is being a continuous leader or learner.
Learner.
I love that. I'm never going to know it all. I would love to be able to tell my kids that. But
well, they were the first people that
knew
it all.
That's right. But I still think today there are lots of things that I can still learn. I can learn from other people.
I'm quite a bit older than you are, and I'm still learning. And one of the questions I always ask people working for me is, what is your learning agenda? And if you're dealing with people that don't have a learning agenda, we need to sort of kick them in the pants and get them going, because there's competition all the time, and your competitors are always learning stuff, so you need to be learning too.
Here's a question, and it's a challenge, okay? Can you pick out an iconic business figure or historical figure that modeled superior leadership? And he said, no peanut butter necessary, Joe.
I think Joe was a great leader. I mean, I've learned a lot from Joe. I value what he did with his business, how he grew the business, how you took it through all the changes. I value you giving back through your leadership program. I learned so much through that. There are so many good leaders. And even the bad leaders, to be honest, even a bad leader I can learn something from. I mean, I've had bad leaders in my career, but I can tell you I probably learned the most from those bad leaders because I have a list of things I would never, ever do because I would never want an employee to feel the way I felt.
Right.
Yeah, there's a lot to be learned from working in a lousy organization with a lousy leader. Particularly the ending of my first 15 years in business, I learned a lot about what not to do, and it helped shape the way I ran Tractor Supply.
I'm fascinated by watching leaders and how they take their companies through the bad times and the good times, because I think in the bad times is when you see whether they will hang with it, the true stripes, I guess.
You know, we were talking a little bit about this earlier, but particularly in bad times is when the leader needs to stand up and talk about where we're going over and over again. Here's the direction, here's the values, here's what we believe in, here's where we're going. Because people, when things are going well, you don't need to talk about that too much. When things are not going well is when people need to hear it, and they need to hear it repetitively.
Mm-hmm.
As we like to say in our leadership classes, typically you can retain 10% of what you hear a week later. So if you want people to really retain something, you've got to say it over and over again.
Yeah.
Adults are just like kids in that regard. You've got to be repetitive about what's most important.
Last chance for questions, *7 or type in the question and hit submit.
No more questions? Time is running down. 5, 4, 3, 2.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it has been wonderful chatting with you. We have loved watching your career since we've known you.
Yes.
It's been a fairly short time. But we're very excited for your new opportunity and can't wait to keep up with what you're doing in Cleveland. And I'm up there every now and then, so hopefully we can see
each other. That sounds good. And anybody on the call, if you're in Cleveland anytime, if there's any MTD people out there and you want to look me up, please connect with me on LinkedIn and we'll have lunch, breakfast, or coffee together.
I love it.
I'm going to make it up there somewhere along the line. You know what's most interesting about today's conversation is what Kim said about networking and cold calling and getting to meet people. Kim is an absolutely star networker, but there's no reason we can't all do that same thing. And so those of you couch potatoes who are listening to the call, don't sit there at your desk and have a brown bag for lunch every day. Get out there and get to meet people, and don't be afraid to cold call them. I think that's just wonderful.
Right.
I think you said only one person turned you down in all the cold calls you made. So I think that's maybe the biggest lesson of all from today.
Right.
Folks, we want to thank you all for joining us. Our next call will be on November 12th, which is also a Thursday. And we have several speakers on the hook, but we don't have one confirmed yet. So with that, we want to wish you all a happy Halloween, and we'll see you next month.